Welcome to another edition of the Multiverse Musings Horrorcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Donnie, the Emerald Enthusiast. Donnie, how's it going?
What's up, Multiverse fans? It's the man who promoted the no-holds-barred fight between Gozer the Gozerian and the Enchantress from Suicide Squad. It's the Emerald Enthusiast.
I was wondering what you were going to do today, because it's not a Green Lantern show, and you didn't disappoint. Normally, Steven would be the host of this show. And I probably wouldn't be here, but it's his birthday as of this recording, so happy birthday, Stephen, aka the Alfred Pennyworth of this podcast network. So he has the day off today, but tomorrow he will resume his tea making duties and whatever else I have him conjure up, posting, you know, episodes and stuff like that. But for today, he's resting and eating lots of cake, I hope, because I told him, have a couple for me from the first piece to the last. So we'll see if he's abiding by those rules. This vidcast is a little different because it is part of the vidcast, but it is also the pilot for a brand new podcast on the network that Donnie and I are going to be co-hosts of. And there is a horror element to it. It's a podcast regarding the Ghostbusters franchise. Mm-hmm. And the name of the podcast is Hunting Haunts, a Ghostbusters podcast. So this is if this was a TV show, it'd be the backdoor pilot. Except right. we've already been picked up because I make those decisions. Right. And this is just a formality. So this is the first episode of the podcast. And another episode of the Horrorcast. So that's how if you're trying to keep track at home, there it is. If you're confused, don't worry. Just come along for the ride.
Sounds like a plan. Now, if I say Shway on this one, do I get another $5 in addition to my regular?
No, it has to be Ghostbusters related.
Has to be Ghostbusters related. Okay.
Yeah. So if you come up with something, let me know and we'll work it into the fee.
How about when Egon was like, your mother?
Well, that could get a little bit dicey if people just come in late to the game and didn't hear this part. So I guess before we dive into the main topic of conversation, which is a review of the first Ghostbusters film, let's sort of give the audience a kind of overview and perspective of our respective Ghostbusters fandom. So, Donnie, tell the audience, both, you know, the ones that's watching and the one that will eventually be listening, to what your connection and how you became a Ghostbusters fan.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm really honored to be here to talk about Ghostbusters today because I saw it in its original theatrical run, and I'd like to talk to some of our younger viewers about what going to the movies was like back then, in particular with it living in a small town, what it was like. You know, there wasn't YouTube, there wasn't the internet back then. There was only this kind of, you know, unformed enthusiasm that you would hear about really big blockbuster movies. And I lived in a small town, and you started seeing these commercials and there were references in magazines. And I got to really excited because I heard about this premise of this group of guys that fought ghosts. And when it arrived, the theater where I saw it, which was a very small theater that only ran a couple of movies at a time, this was not a large multiplex or anything, they put up this very large ghost standee. Somebody had made it by hand and said, Ghostbusters is here. And I knew that was special because they were any other kind of movie. It had to be huge. It had to be Star Wars or Ghostbusters or something along those lines.
Sure.
And I remember seeing it in the theater, and it was such a wild ride. I will say that the ghost in the library at the beginning, I was only 11 years old, and it scared me legitimately for a couple of minutes. Yeah. But as I've gotten older, you know, of course, I've watched I watched the cartoon later on. I've watched all the movies multiple times. And this is just, it's such a fun, inventive, original franchise that I just can't get enough of it. So I'm very happy to be here today to talk about Ghostbusters with Adam.
Yeah, that's a cool story and how that, you know, somebody made that standee by hand. You know, nowadays that's all manufactured by the studio.
Sure.
And typically sent to the theater to put up or what have you.
I would like to say one thing. The theater where I saw it, actually in 1984, they don't show movies anymore, but they do a lot of culturally relevant things in the city of Clifton Forge, Virginia. And actually, it is the Historic Masonic Theater. That's all one word, .com. That's their web address. And if you want to get on there, if you're in the Clifton Forge area and you want to, you know, check out a historic theater, they've actually been standing since 1905. You want to check that out? Give them a look there. If they may have some shows eventually. Obviously, they're under COVID protocols right now.
Right.
But they do a lot of interesting things. I haven't been back there for 20 years, but I was kind of, I got a shot of nostalgia when I saw that they were still open. So a lot of good times there for me. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. Cool. Yeah. I encourage our viewers and listeners to check that out and have a look and see what that's all about. For me, I did not have the luxury of seeing it in the theater because I would have been 1 year old when that film came out. I saw it on the television broadcast, I believe. Must have been around, because the second one came out in 89, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Right, so I think I saw it around that time. My first, and largely my relationship to it originally was because my brother was, you and my brother are the same age, so my brother was into this kind of stuff, so whatever he was watching, I'd kind of, you know, piggyback and watch the same thing. As somebody, we may need to call the Ghostbusters with all these notes, but
I think I just had a figure fall down. That's a bad day.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll have to figure out which one it is later. But yeah, so a lot of it was because my brother was watching it. I'd kind of peek in and watch too. And that happened with a couple of things. Star Trek was one of them. Star Wars. You know, these are things that I got introduced by being around my brother and sort of watching what he's watching. So I remember watching it. But my vivid memories of the franchise actually start with the cartoon, because I was, you know, that's when I really got keyed into it. But in terms of the movie, from what I remember of my initial watchings, I agree with you. The library ghost did, you know, scare the crap out of me at that young age, more so than it did you, because I was even younger than you, so you can imagine. Listen, I used to hide behind my couch when The Undertaker used to come out in wrestling, because he used to scare the crap out of me. So every time I hear that music, it's like, part of me is like, oh, hold on, wait. Should I be scared? I know I'm 37 now, but
You know what? That same theater that I was talking about, the Historic Masonic Theater, I think it was called the Stonewall at the time, but I saw one of the last movies I saw there was Suburban Commando, which The Undertaker was in.
That's correct. Yeah. And the classic Hulk Hogan film.
Yeah.
Another 80s superstar.
Yeah. Classic might be a bit of a stretch, but well, the Undertaker held the
ring. Hey, listen, I enjoyed it. I don't care if anybody else didn't.
Likewise. You know, it was a fun ride. You know, a masterpiece it was not, but it was fun.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah. Of course not. But yeah, so no, but I remember I have that faint memory as a child being scared of that librarian. But, you know, rewatching it just without going into the review, it is just a great time and a ton of fun. And this franchise, it's such a good, entertaining piece of original IP that is really, they don't make movies this way anymore. And we'll talk about that as we get into the review. What my aim to do, Donnie, with this podcast, and you know this already because we've had this. I don't just spring podcasts on people, contrary to what the audience may think, because every week we seem to have a new show. But you know, we have a back and forth interaction, and we formulate a plan, and that's how things. You know, I'm very. It seems haphazard, but there's a method to my madness, and so we talked about this. So Donnie knows what the plan is. But we are going to review the three films. Yes, I said three, because we are reviewing Ghostbusters Answer the Call as well. And then we are going to transition into, once we've taken care of the films, we are going to then transition our focus. Now, of course, before I say transition our focus, we are definitely going to cover and review Ghostbusters Afterlife, the new film, and hopefully many subsequent films after that, if all goes well. But the focus of this podcast is really going to key in on two things: the real Ghostbusters animated series, and the IDW comic universe, which Donnie is going to be taking his first deep dive into. So this will be a fun experience for him because he's not.
I'm a comic book guy, obviously. Just in case you didn't know that.
I mean, what could give it away? It
just, right. Yeah.
It looks like a non-comic book fan's room over there. It's a miracle you even came across any of these things called comic books. But no, yeah. So it's his first exposure to the Ghostbusters comics. And that's going to be a fun thing to experience. Watch him go through, you know, the first readings.
And looking forward to that, yeah.
His reactions to them. I've read, I'm not up to date, but I've read a few. So I'm a little bit more... keyed in to the IDW universe, but it'll be fun to get Donnie up to speed and do reviews of those, and also go back and have the nostalgic memories of covering the animated series. So that's the plan for this podcast, and we think it's gonna be a lot of fun, and hopefully you'll come along for the ride, and if we can convince you to pick up some comic books or revisit that animated series, or if you haven't seen it, you know, check it out. Then we're doing something right, I think. So that's the plan. And before we can get to any of that, we've got to honor the films. And so that's what we're going to do with a review of the 1984 original. So Donnie, get us started. What are some thoughts on the film? What are some of the things you want to key on regarding the film? And we'll take your lead from there.
Well, you know, I do remember over the years reading a lot of interviews about how the film was formulated, the premise. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I remembered is that Dan Aykroyd, he had an interest in the paranormal that came from his parents. And so that's where this kind of started. And originally, later on, I read a quote by Ivan Reitman, who said that the Ghostbusters was... at least in some of the planning stages, it was scarier than what came across. It originally wasn't as comedic. And at one point, there was kind of a space theme. There was an intergalactic backdrop set in the future somehow. So obviously, I mean, I haven't seen scripts or anything like that. I would love to see how that came from the original planning stages to what we got. And, so, yeah, and, you know, John Belushi was originally supposed to be in Ghostbusters. He passed away not long after Dan Aykroyd began to write it. And Eddie Murphy was originally going to be in it too. So it definitely was different than what we got. But as it came about, it was just a masterpiece. So absolutely hilarious, by the way. No matter how many times you see it, it's still funny.
Oh, it is. And it's not... The reason why I think it's funny is because they're not trying to force the humor. It's just coming naturally out of the situations that they're presented with. But you've also got three guys that are playing the scenes that they're in relatively straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they're not... Comedy is a delicate balance. And I believe that when you start winking at the camera and saying, ha-ha, we know we're playing it that way, the comedy feels manufactured. Whereas this, they're reacting in certain ways to what are supposed to be, you know, world-ending scary stuff.
Right.
And out of those scenarios, their reactions is where the comedy is coming from. And that's what makes, I think, what makes it funny. Because otherwise, it has the danger of becoming a Saturday Night Live skit.
Right.
You know, like, when you watch Saturday Night Live, you're not, like, here's an example. The recent Saturday Night Live, they're doing their take on the debates, right? No, they're funny. Because you already know going in what they're poking fun at. It's not like you're believably put into the situation and saying, oh, yeah, like I actually feel like I'm watching the debates. You know you're watching a play on something. So there's difference. The difference is, and I think here's why it works. That initial library scene, where you see the ghost, there is a legitimate jump scare there.
Very much so.
And as your 11-year-old and my however old I was self can attest, but that initial moment draws you into the story. So now you're part of the narrative, as opposed to you're watching them, play on something that's already happened. That's where I think the comedy works and why part of the reason why it works.
Really at no point, what I want to say is at no point do you really feel like they're simply winking at the camera and saying, oh, we're making this funny ghost movie or whatever. They do a lot of humor, but it's done in such a way that it never takes you out of that universe. Right. There are still some scary monsters. There are still some earth-shattering events, literally, towards the end.
Yes.
And it never pulls you out in such a way that you can't reinvest yourself back in this battle with the supernatural. Right. So it was a fine line they were walking, and they did it quite well.
Yeah. 100%. One of the things that I think is fantastic about the concept is that, they're all the three main guys before Ernie Hudson's Winston comes into play. But the three original founders of the Ghostbusters are very intelligent individuals. They're scientists, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, when Ivan Reitman and Dan Aykroyd talk about the movie, often refer to the Ghostbusters as, sometimes firemen, sometimes garbage men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's that down to earth, job, that boots on the ground kind of job, that really sells the concept. Because if they were special FBI agents, right, investigating the scenario, like Mulder and Scully, like if Mulder and Scully were kind of Ghostbusters, you'd expect them to be investigating such scenarios. Mm-hmm. It's the unexpected nature of here, basically guys in coveralls.
Right. Very workmanlike.
The word I'm looking for. It's the workmanlike approach to it that really sells the concept. and really, and part of that makes it funny too, because you, in your head, you're thinking, how are these guys in coveralls? Forget about the fact that they're scientists for a second. But how are these guys going to stop a giant, you know, Stay Puft Man? Like, how are they going to, how's that going to work?
Right.
So that's part of the appeal to me as well.
Yeah, a lot of very memorable visuals here because, you know, like you and I said, you know, usually these aren't the kind of characters that you would expect opposing the supernatural. You might think, you know, special agents, people who are, you know, particularly intelligent, or a priest or a shaman or something like that. With these guys, you know, they look like exterminators or, you know, firemen, just very kind of a mundane. These are the people who you call if you have this infestation.
Yes.
So they sell that, which is kind of ridiculous, but they do it in such a way that you buy it completely.
Right.
And that's part of the genius of this movie.
And I 100% agree. And what I like the fact is that because now they are scientists, so they are all very smart individuals. But, you know, they come up with this, you know, there's some scientific jargon, as I like to call it. There's a lot of scientific jargon thrown in. But a lot of the times, be it through Peter, who tells them, you know, basically infers, basically gives them a cue based on, you know, his snarky response to kind of dumb it down, right?
Right.
Or when Winston comes onto the scene, because he's a layman coming into this world of the paranormal, the movie has a way of presenting that jargon in a very simplistic way because of those two characters. And it allows the audience to still remain, you know, dialed into what's going on. Because sometimes when you hear all that, you know, mumbo jumbo, you can get lost in all that scientific talk. In certain movies, that, you know, that could happen, right?
Right.
And so it never happens here. And those two characters are the conduits to explaining that kind of dialogue, and doing it in a way that is not, it doesn't feel like useless, you know, not useless, useless is the wrong word, forced exposition or forced explanation. Again, they're doing things, they make something like that seem like a natural progression. And that's key to the success of the film, because you could have lost a lot of people.
Right. In the introduction of Winston later on, especially as some of the bigger concepts near the end, he's the guy who kind of, you know, he's the street smart guy, the kind of everyman, but he is able to absorb what they say and kind of, you know, regurgitate it to them in a way where the audience is like, oh, okay, that's what they mean. Because he's the guy, you know, he's the guy who's there basically because he's brave and he wants a paycheck. You know, like he said, if, you know, I'll believe anything you tell me if there's a steady paycheck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll do the job. Just make sure the check clears, you know. But, you know, I think a big, the big success of this film is the characters. So let's talk a little bit about the characters. Who in the group is your favorite?
You know, I would have to say I'd probably go with Egon because, you know, he is the smartest of the group and he's very pragmatic. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard for me to pick a favorite because each character in and of, you know, their own right, the way they play upon each other, I don't think any of these characters by themselves come anywhere near the greatness of the group. It's all of them working collectively that makes this magic. I will say that Peter Venkman's, let's say his interactions with women are a little questionable. You know, we see that right away. He seems to be, you know, grooming one of his students. And
yeah, that would have never flew, like that won't fly today.
Right. It's funny. I'm not saying that opening scene is not funny, but any ladies who are watching this, if you're in college and you have a professor acting that way toward you, please report them.
Yeah. I totally get your point about, you know, it's them working in concert and the way they bounce off each other that really makes it work. But I do, And I get it. He's kind of sleazy at times. But God, Peter Venkman is just, he's just, he's classic. I don't want to say he's my spirit animal because of what he does at the beginning. But aside from that part, you know, like, I like the part. And you can see that he's, despite that part of it.
Sure.
You can see that he's a good guy because there's a chance where he could have taken advantage of Dana.
Right.
When she was possessed by
Zool. Yes.
Zool, yeah. And he didn't. And so that is the, that brings it back and say, you know, he's actually a good guy. He's just a little.
He's rather boastful. Kind of like Guy Gardner. How about that?
Yeah. There is a little similarity. But yeah, he's just, I guess, I don't know, like he reminds me, you know, for example, Ghostbusters, the comic, did a crossover with the Ninja Turtles. And him and Raphael, you know, pair off. And it's great because, you know, they're two peas in a pod kind of thing, right? Right. Given their temper and their attitude.
Right. The most headstrong of the group. Right.
Right. Right. And I've always gravitated to Raphael. So it makes sense that I gravitate towards Peter. But I also love, like, Ray's. He's like that. He's got that optimism and that excitement that, think about it. If you're experiencing this stuff, yeah, part of it, you know, in certain situations would scare the crap out of you, like when you're confronting these things.
Right.
But the idea that stuff like that exists is, oh my God, that's cool.
Yeah. No, like, you know, you talk about, you know, Venkman is the one that in the library when the ghost says, shh, he looks like he's ready to pee his pants. So he's,
yeah.
There's a lot of bluster, but underneath that he knows that something right, serious yeah, is going on here.
But it's like, okay, I'm back away. Yeah. And that's part of the fun. But I do like Ray's kind of jovial excitement towards everything.
Right. And, which is how he, you know, formulated the plan of getter.
Yeah.
In the library, which they just kind of run in with no plan at all. Kind of like the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll just go into the game and with no plan at all and see what happens.
Yeah, we'll just wing it. Yeah, yeah. I call that, that's also the Leafs defense strategy in hockey. They just say, well, we'll just throw something against the wall and see if it sticks. Oftentimes it doesn't. But yeah, no. So, and then Egon, like you were saying, he's the matter of fact. This is it. This is the science behind it. This is how we have to progress. So I think there's something for everybody. And I think in certain situations, you'd want to have a little bit of each person's personality. And I think in some respects, we all do. Like, we all have a little bit of each of them
mm-hmm.
within ourselves, which makes them so relatable.
By the way, I want to say rest in peace, Harold Ramis.
Yes, that's he was
the first of the Ghostbusters that we've lost. And
he was great. He was, and I know they honored him in the 2016 film, which I thought was clever. We'll talk about that more when we get there. And apparently, according to Dan Aykroyd, the new film will honor him as well. So, in a more direct way, based off the trailer, of course. Again, we'll talk about that probably in our next episode because we want to rewatch it at least one more time. Before we go do a little bit of a deep dive on it. But the other thing that has to work, aside from the characters, is the threat and the ghost. So what did you think of those in terms of, you know, like, did you think, again, so scare factor, talk about the scare factor as one thing, and then talk about the overall, like, because we're dealing with such regular, basically really smart but regular folk as our heroes, what did you think of the end of the world, like the big third act Avenger style, because think about it, it's a Marvel Avengers or DC style third act, but we're dealing with a bunch of characters that have absolutely no super abilities at all. So did it work? Was it jarring? Did it work? Like, how did you find the balance? Like, how did you?
You know, I'll say this. a lot of older movies, I go back and watch them, and I can't always get into them because of the deficits with the effects. You know, a lot of movies that come from that time period, the 80s, the effects are very cheesy. Not here. These effects hold up very well. And I like the design of the ghosts. It wasn't the usual, you know, with a lot of older movies, it's, you know, like a sheet thrown over a human, that kind of design. These were very different, monstrous designs that gave you this idea that there's this entire universe existing just outside of our reality with these supernatural entities. And for me, that's part of the continued appeal of this movie.
Yeah. For me, I do want to say again, visually, there were, like, as we talked about the library ghost at the beginning, was very, very, there's the frightening element. And then I don't know what their technical designation is, but those demon dogs, if you will.
I believe they're officially called terror dogs.
Okay, terror. Okay, there it
is. I've heard them referred to in any number of ways, devil dogs, demon dogs, but I think they're called terror dogs.
Terror dogs. Well, yeah. Those look scary as hell.
Exactly.
Now, there are a couple of moments in the film where they're running where it kind of dates.
Sure.
The effects, but when they're, you know, gnashing their teeth at you or barking or growling, and you get a real close-up of them, man, do they look good. And they look freaky.
Yeah.
And me being someone who, how can I say this, has a fear of a certain type of dog, those things make me squirm, squeamish and squirm. So job well done. And there was one scene that really sort of sells it right away, is when the first time when Dana's pulled into the closet,
yeah,
and all you see is basically teeth and the red eyes,
right?
And I'm like, that's some freaky. So yeah, it's a comedy, but there's some freaky crap going on here. Especially as a younger person, that could probably maybe give you nightmares.
Sure. And those were practical effects too, but it still works. You never question what's going on. It's just, it's a moment of fear.
And like I said, the only time that it looks a little bit wonky is when they're running.
Sure.
But, you know, what are you going to do? We are talking about 1984, right? So it's, you can't ask 1984 effects to look like 2020 effects. It's impossible. Sure. And then before we move on to like Slimer and the Stay Puft Man, because I do want to touch on those, Gozer, of course, I want to mention the character of Dana, because we didn't when we talked about the guys, and she's just as important as the guys. Because if her character doesn't work, the whole thing potentially falls flat on his face.
Right.
And what I like about it is that she goes from your average working woman, right? Who, at the beginning, in how she's frightened by the thing, and you know, she goes to the Ghostbusters.
She's still skeptical, despite the fact that it just happened. She's skeptical of them and the supernatural.
Like, you know. She's got that damsel in distress quality, but she's also got that intelligent quality in the sense that, do I trust these guys? Are they shysters? Are they trying to take me for my money? Like, she even, in her interactions with Peter, which were hilarious, where he's sort of like trying to get the details on her case, but at the same time, you know, sleazily hook up with her.
Right. And I do want to point out another thing, that Sigourney Weaver has all kinds of comedic chemistry with Rick Moranis in this.
Yeah.
The scenes with Dana and Lewis, and I love his dating strategy of, if I throw enough words at her, I'm bound to say something that she likes eventually. Yeah. So I'm going to keep at it.
It's not about strategy. But no, she was great in the sense that she sold, you know, in the beginning, she was able to sell. There's a little bit of damsel in distress, but intelligent enough to, you know, question, are these guys, you know, the real deal, or are they taking me for a ride, or what's going on here? And she was able to pull that off. But then when she gets possessed, it's a totally different performance. And my God, was she good as the possessed, in the possessed role. I mean, she had, it was a mix of, damn, she's really attractive. Like, they've hyped up the attractiveness like tenfold. And of course they did it purposely. But when there was a point where I'm like, all right, I can see, you know, Peter, I understand where you're coming from, you know, attractiveness, the whole age. But then when she opens her mouth and she's got that demonized voice, it's like, yeah, all right, any attraction is out the window.
Like, for, exactly, you
know,
yeah.
All right, I ain't going near that. That's a little too freaky for my liking. But
no matter how attractive you may be, you start talking like Regan from The Exorcist, and I think any attraction goes out the window.
I'm out. You instantly get removed from the list when you start talking like that.
By the way, the list is something that you will have to tune into the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network to find out more about.
Yeah, newbies who have never heard about the list are like, what's he talking about? There have been many an episode where that has been mentioned.
Where that has come up, yes.
And there will be a full reveal come Stephen is dead set on that being our Valentine's Day episode. So there, that's what it'll be. But no, she was really good in that, that possessed state.
Yes.
And this was before she became, you know, a sci-fi role, another breakout role in the sci-fi realm. This was wasn't it a year before she did?
Alien came first.
Right. What was it?
Yeah, Alien. Are we talking about Alien or are we talking about Galaxy Quest?
Alien did come first. That's right.
Alien came first. Yes.
But I don't know, like, now she's known more in those roles, but before, like, it was just, she wasn't as synonymous back, and I think this helped her cement that status of, you know,
being. This was different than her other roles. It really was something that you hadn't seen her do before.
And so. I don't know if you know this, but she in her audition, she basically got up on the table and started doing that whole possessed routine, because originally, that wasn't in the script, but she wanted to be part of it. So to prove to Ivan Reitman that she could do it, she got up on the table and started acting all crazy like that. And
her body movements are just incredible. The little twitches that she does,
and
those
notice,
are amazing.
And notice their nods to The Exorcist there too. So they do pay homage to other horror franchises. You know, there's a little bit of The Omen and all kinds of things, but they do pay homage to other horror, the horror genre as a whole as well, which is good. But she was great, and I just thought we had to take some time to mention that, because we didn't in the initial. Now, Slimer is one of the most popular pieces of merchandise to come from this film and this franchise, and it's just amazing how he looks. Or it looks, I don't know how you want to phrase that, given that it was a practical thing back then, like it was a practical creation. Mm-hmm. And it looks so good. And that's one thing that doesn't look, like, you know how I said, when the terror dogs move occasionally, it looks a little bit wacky. Slimer never looks wacky.
You felt like he was there. That the effects drew you in. So I'm going to say he, because he ate in a very sloppy manner. Yeah, so I'm going to say it's more likely that he was a he.
Yeah, but we're messy eaters. Like, give me a plate of wings and it's a chaos.
Yeah, there was no daintiness there. So
yeah, that's like me if you put like 2 pounds of wings in front of me. Well, back in the day, I could eat 2 pounds of wings. Now it's like, All right, I had a certain point. It's like I can't do it anymore. I'm very ashamed of myself, by the way, over that fact. I'm very, very disappointed in myself. But anyway, enough about my wing eating, because now I'm getting hungry for wings. Yeah, he was, and you get that appeal, like, of he's got that. It's in a like he'd be an adorable plushie to own. But he's also equally disgusting and somewhat frightening. Like again, this franchise is hell bent. It seems to be hell bent on the success is dependent on finding a balance, and they found the balance between, adorable. I want to take one home. So, yeah, but he's kind of disgusting and
He's got it
scary.
right.
There's that, there's that push and pull, and. And I think they nailed it, bang on.
And they built on that, his popularity, by aligning him with the Ghostbusters in the cartoon.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And then, the thing that I think what really takes this movie and puts it over the edge is the way they stick the landing in the third act. Because you've got, Gozer, and then you got the Stay Puft Man, and it literally is. And when I rewatched it yesterday, I said to myself, "This, there's the same level of chaos and destruction happening here as there was in the first Avengers movie."
Yeah, and yeah, that's not something I can argue. And not all of it comes from the ghosts, by the way. The Ghostbusters themselves, they when they go to the, what was it, the Sedgwick Hotel, and they're like, so they charge $5,000, and I'm like, I'm not an expert, but it looks to me like you did more than $5,000 worth of property damage.
And again, if this was the internet age, I'm sure there would be some fanboys online complaining about the property damage and who's going to pay for it and all those ridiculous people
Right.
say when they watch a superhero movie because we got to complain about something in today's day and age, right?
Right.
But one of the things I found really interesting is that Gozer himself, when he takes, a humanoid form,
Yes.
it's kind of androgynous. So you're not sure, is he leaning male? Is he more female? You don't know. And I gotta give, I don't know if this was intentional, but in today's day and age, the fact that it's either or is a really inclusive and great thing because why does it have to be one or the other? Just it is. I mean, it is what it is. You make it what you want to make it. You see it how you want to see it, and I think it's cool because in the world of cosplay now, right? Anybody could cosplay as Gozer, as
As
that
those are,
iteration of
yeah,
Gozer,
that's an excellent point.
and it's good. Like again, nowadays in movies, sometimes, I mean, I'm all for 100% for inclusiveness, but I've always said, I've said on our other shows several times, when you're doing it to wink at the audience and say, look, we're doing it, that's the wrong way to do it. Whether it was intentional or not to have it be, it could be either a male or female figure form. I don't know if that was intentional, but it's brilliant. And that's the way to do it. It just is, and you can make your own inferences. And I think one of the characters says, I thought it was a man, or I thought he was a man. And he says, well, does it really matter? It's, he can be whatever he wants.
Right.
And I can't remember which character said what, but that's a very important,
Well, the thing I want to say, to your point, with, when Dana is overtaken, and she is still very attractive. With Gozer, the function of that character is to be kind of, the big bad towards the end, and just to intimidate. And that's executed very well.
100%. And then with the Stay Puft Man, another one of the most iconic aspects of this franchise. I love the homage that they gave to the Godzilla franchise when he makes his appearance. And I love the fact that the way it was filmed, and you could tell there was matte paintings involved and miniatures, right? But it looks so good. Like that aspect of the film holds up 100%.
Exactly.
And on the roof of the building, all that holds up 100%. And like the effect of the streams, all that looks amazing. But what I loved about the Stay Puft Man is, again, the Godzilla inferences, all those, like I said, the matte work and the miniature work. It's of that era, and it reminds me of like Superman the movie, Batman 89, and all those movies that also did that. But what works about the Stay Puft Man is, again, much like Slimer, there is a, oh my God, I want one that's adorable, and holy crap, that's kind of creepy.
Right. And I got to give a nod out to the sound effects team on that, because you really felt the ground shaking, especially in the theater at the time. When Stay Puft shows up, you know, the sound, you could feel the reverberation underneath your chair in the theater. And that was another way of, you know, intimidating the audience, and that worked very well.
And it just, I don't know about you, but when they defeated the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and the resulting, I guess, marshmallow residue was everywhere, I had an instantaneous desire to have some hot chocolate. I was like, damn it, there's none in the house where I'd make a cup right now. You brought about a good point. The music and the sound effects are another important character in this film, because they get you scared when they want you scared, and there's that hopeful, upbeat, playful positiveness when they want to elicit those emotions.
Right. And I'm not really a music guy. I'm not somebody who goes out and buys a lot of music, but that theme song, you hear those first few notes of that and you're immediately drawn in.
You mean the piano one, right?
The Ray Parker Jr. song.
Oh, you're talking about the theme song.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great song. Yeah. That may or may not be my ringtone for the month of October for Halloween.
It would be a good choice.
It is, actually. So I won't dilute the quite very much. It's just, but it's a great theme. But I'm talking about like the film score as well, not just the theme. Like it helps elicit whatever emotion it wants from you, and that's the key of a good score. Because some scores can sound generic, and then you have
when the containment unit is shut down and you see the ghosts, you know, overtaking New York City. This kind of weird, you know, theme comes about, and it really sets the tone of something very unsettling is about to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, something I want to point out to our listeners and viewers is that Donnie, when he was rewatching the film, he sent me a clip that while he was watching it, of it was when Dana first comes to the firehouse, and she's talking to Janine. And Ray, because he's so enamored by, you know, how beautiful she is, he leaps over like two desks to interact with her. And Donnie said, I imagine you doing this if one of your multiverse wives, if you ever met one of your multiverse wives. And I'm like, you know what? I can't argue with that, because I would have done exactly that.
That was another comedically brilliant moment. I also like, you know, the firehouse, especially when you see it at the beginning. I mean, it looks like a place where Deadpool wouldn't want to sleep, which is really saying something.
It's a great locale. It is a great locale. And like when Ray gets excited about the fire pole. Yeah, I'd get excited about that too.
Very workmanlike, you know. They're not coming at you from, you know, some old cottage or something that's enchanted, or a church or something like that. Again, very workmanlike, like exterminators. They bring their lunch pails to fight ghosts.
Right. Yeah, and you know, for me, when I saw that fire pole, you know, the first thing I thought of, well, I know you're going to take it in. You're thinking of a more less perverse direction. I'm thinking of Batman 66 and Batman and Robin sliding down the pole. You know, that when I was a kid especially, I'm like, hey, Batman's got a pole too. Batman and Robin have poles too. And yeah. And that was my association, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So if they ever do a Batman meets the Ghostbusters, look, I don't know how it would work rights wise, but IDW and DC have to partner on this and do Batman 66 meets the Ghostbusters.
That would work great as an animated movie. It would be amazing. Yeah.
Like, please do it. Do me that favor and make that thing. I'd buy it 1,000 times over. But there was another, some of the dialogue is very adult.
There's some innuendo,
which I had forgot about. Like the ending where, you know, the third act when they're discussing how we're going to beat the Stay Puft Man. And Ray says, well, he's a sailor. We're in New York. All we got to do is get him laid and we'll be fine.
Right.
I could not stop. I was literally, I had to pause. I was laughing for about 5 minutes straight. Then there's also the scene where Ray is sleeping.
Yeah, you know, I remember the first time I watched that with my kids, I was like, oh, I forgot about this scene. This is a little uncomfortable. We're going to fast forward just a little bit through this scene.
Yeah, I'm like, and you know what? I forgot that happened. And as I'm watching, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Well, I know what's going on here, but.
That went over my head when I was 11 years old. Oh, you know, watching as a father, I was just like, oh, you know, well, much different now.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of quotes in Batman Returns that went over my head as a kid. And now, you know, we rewatched it for one of the podcasts, and I was howling like a fiend. I'm like, me and the Penguin, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Penguin is very lecherous.
The things you pick, and you know, with when Peter's with Dana and she's possessed, you know, there's the scene where she's like something, she says something to that effect that's very, you know, it's not so, I mean, there's innuendo, but it's also like it's plainly literal what she says. And
I believe one of her quotes was, "Do you want this body?" You know, when she was Zool.
Yeah, but there was something else along the lines of you know, the Keymaster and
the gay key, right.
Yeah. And that's another thing. Donnie, after we had talked, I think it was like a day after we had talked about doing this podcast, this is a podcast, he sent me, it was a meme or an image of the WWE superstar Alexa Bliss. She's got, you know, crazy hair. And the meme is like, are you the Keymaster? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I am. So I had a very Peter Venkman moment when I saw that meme.
I could see you dressed up like Lewis and saying, yeah, come in.
I would have been hopping over desk for that one for sure.
The question is, will you do my taxes at the end of the vidcast?
Yeah, well, if you want them done well, I'm probably not the best option to go to because I have no idea. Like, we get them done, so I'm the wrong. I can put you in contact with my guy, but beyond that, you know, we'll leave it at that. But, so there is, you know, for the adults, there is a lot of innuendo and interesting dialogue.
Another one, just a thing that I want to point out, another way of validating and kind of making memories for this, you get a cameo from Larry King in this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And there's also a cameo, you hear Casey Kasem's voice, who, mm-hmm. by the way, was Robin in the old Super Friends TV show. Right. He says the phrase, pretty pesky poltergeist, which I think was very memorable. So.
And was he not in Scooby-Doo as well? Or am I misremembering? He was one of the voices, I think, in the Scooby-Doo animated series, the original stuff. But one of the things another line that got to me was like how forceful Winston was in getting the mayor to like believe what the Ghostbusters were saying. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I've seen some things that make your ass turn white. I was dying. And shout out to Walter Peck, who is, he's got to be, like, if there's a list for, like, top 10 pricks on cinema, he's got to be in the top three.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be an episode, like biggest douchebags in cinema, but he's on there. And William Atherton does a great job of playing that kind of.
That was a very important part in that movie. Extremely. And his facial expressions, as soon as he shows up, you know this is going to be an unlikable guy. This guy's a villain. Before he really starts to give you any dialogue, just the way his body movement and his gaze, you're immediately, you know, unsettled by this guy. It was a masterful piece of acting.
I definitely want to make sure that we mentioned that. One thing that you'll notice going forward, especially when we hit the comic books, Winston is far more elaborated on and developed in the comics than he is in the films. They go into his background as, I think it's a Marine, if I'm remembering correct from the comics, and his leadership qualities. They go into that a lot more. And so he's fleshed out a lot more in the comic. So that's something for you to notice when we get there.
Okay.
That I think you'll find interesting.
Did you see the episode of Comic Book Man that he was on? If you ever have a chance to see that, it's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. I love Ernie Hudson. He's fantastic. And of course played John Diggle Stewart's father on Arrow. Stepfather, I should say. So that was another, that was cool to see him in that too. But of course, we can't end the show, you know, before we do our rating. We talked about the firehouse and what a great locale is. But what about the Ecto-Mobile? My God, what a, in the pantheon of movie vehicles, again, that's got to be near the top of anybody's list.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you would obviously, things like the Batmobile and, you know, Kit from Knight Rider. Yeah. But the Ecto-Mobile, it's definitely on the top of the list somewhere because it's very unusual and the sound is unusual. It's everything about it is memorable.
Yeah, so, the siren, the rumbling, everything. It just and the look of it. It looks it's so unique. And I saw a piece of art the other day. It was a mashup of the Ecto-Mobile. I can't even talk now. The Ecto-Mobile and the 1989 Batmobile. And to me, like, now you're speaking
your language. Right?
Make that toy, and I will buy 5 copies of it, provided it's specifically priced.
Yeah. Speaking of toys, there's a lot of Ghostbusters merch out, a lot of high quality Ghostbusters merch. I mean, it's been go ahead.
I'm forcing myself, I'm trying hard to stay off Amazon. You have no idea how, like, I've never bought a Funko Pop before. Mm-hmm. I've saw some that I know I want one.
I've seen some of the 6-inch figures that are just amazing.
Likeness is it's. I don't know if I'm going to last the weekend without buying one.
you're trying to make it through the weekend, huh? Yeah.
I don't think it's going to work. By the end of the weekend, I'm going to pull the trigger on either a Ghostbusters figure or a Spawn figure. I don't know which one it's going to be, but I'm telling you, come back to me Monday and one of them will be purchased.
You can't go wrong either way.
Yeah. And the problem is I want both. That's the real problem. That's the real, I don't think I'm going to win this battle, folks.
Right.
And if I was, this is why I would never make it as a Green Lantern, because eventually, see, the minute I click on Amazon,
hey, your willpower's gone.
I've got willpower. It's
your ring would just kind of float away.
You know what it is? It's the yellow in the Amazon logo that's killing me, right? one of those figures is going to be bought by the time. By the time this podcast is up, that's not true. Steven could end up having it up by tomorrow. I'm not sure. But that depends on Steven. But there's a good chance, there's a 50% chance that by the time you're listening to and watching this show, I may have one of those figures already on its way to me.
I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, and maybe I'll do a product review of the one, because it'll be the one Ghostbusters thing I have. It'll be an easy product review, and I'll get you to do the voiceover because I'm, you know, the things you do on on the Green Lantern stuff is phenomenal. So,
Well, thank you, sir.
I defer to you in terms of product reviews. Nobody wants to hear me. I don't even want to hear myself talk. So, in the spirit of that, I think is there any final thoughts on the movie before we give our grade?
Well, you know, an interesting piece of information that I often see is there are a lot of web searches done as to whether Zul and Gozer were actual deities. And I know they mention Sumeria and the Hittites, you know, in the movie, but, you know, these aren't, even though the Hittites were polytheistic, these are fictional deities that were made up. So I see that a lot, though. You know, I've seen conversations where, like, they were real, right? You know, those were, you know, really historic gods before. Well, no, you know. They drew on some, but those weren't actual named gods within.
I do want to buy the Tobin Spirit Guide, the book that is out there that supposedly was written by, Egon and Ray, I think it was. In actuality, it's written by, I think, the comic book writer who's writing.
Actually
wrote the actual book. So, I do want to. There are a couple of Ghostbusters related books, you know, the making of that I like to buy at some point. Again, like I said, it's only a matter of time. The minute I click on Amazon, it's over. My wallet is already screaming, stop! Before you start, stop that.
Well, obviously I'm not going to judge you, so hey.
You're not one to pull me off that ledge.
Not at all, no.
Push me over, be like, go ahead.
All you got to do is slap a Green Lantern symbol on something and, you know, you've got me. So, you know, hook like a fish.
You want to sell Donnie a vacuum cleaner?
Don't say that because somebody will make it.
Put a Green Lantern logo on, it's done. Even if you make one sale, you can charge $100 Donnie. So do you want to mention, you want to now either, we can do it after our rating or before? You said you had a story regarding the 2016 film.
Very quick. You know, my youngest daughter is a big fan of Answer the Call. And she asked for Ghostbusters things for Christmas that year in 2016. And she said, Daddy, make sure that you get me, you know, a figure or a plush of Squish. And I said, Squish? I was like, what? I was like, you mean Slimer? She's like, yeah, Slimer. So I was just like, yeah, that's green awesome. Ghost, that's Slimer. So
yeah. That's awesome. And look, I will get to that movie. That movie was so unfairly
criticized,
treated.
Yeah.
Before the movie even came out, it was treated in a certain way. And we'll talk about that and we'll share our thoughts on that movie when the time comes. We are going to cover it. And any fans of that movie, don't be afraid. Because we're going to be much kinder, I think, to.
And you are more than welcome here.
To the film, exactly. Of course, we don't diminish any fan's opinion. Whatever my stance, and I think Donnie's the same way. Whatever got you into this franchise and made you a fan is good enough for us. So you're all welcome here. But with that said, if you had to give a letter grade for Ghostbusters, what would it be, Donnie?
Oh, I would have to say an A+. I mean, I would have, mainly because of the time that has passed, very minor criticisms, mostly of the effects, but the performances, the narratives that run throughout this, the theme, it's really hard to criticize anything that is this original and that is executed this exquisitely.
Well, very well said. For me, again, if I had any criticisms, it's the minor one with the terror dogs. But again, I can't really fault them for something that was probably state of the art when they did it.
Sure.
And it looks slightly wonky in certain areas, but really, I'm not going to be that much of a jerk and pick that apart because it is what it is.
Sure.
Overall, this was a really fun movie. And it's had an impact that's lasted 35 years, I think it is.
36 years now.
36 now, yeah. It's 1 year younger than I am. So I'm aging with this franchise. God help us both when we hit 50.
Don't say that, because 50 is not that far away for me.
Yeah, but you make 50 work. I'm not going to be a good
50. Well, thank you. I don't always feel that way.
I'm going to be a disaster when I'm 50. I'm going to be like Bruce Wayne in The Dark Knight Returns, old, miserable. I won't be as buff, I can guarantee you that, because I ain't doing all that working out crap, not at that age. I mean, it's had an impact that's lasted 3.5 decades and will last much longer than that. It's a film that strikes the perfect balance between horror and humor. And there have been other films that have tried and failed where Ghostbusters succeeded. It hits all the right notes. For the most part, has effects that, like I said, hold up. The musical score is great. And for all those reasons, I also give it an A+. So perfect scores all around. Now, while you wait for the next episode, you can always keep in touch with Donnie and myself via social media. So, Donnie, if people want to continue the Ghostbusters conversation, where do they do that?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as the Emerald Enthusiast. Obviously, I talk a lot about Green Lantern. I do Green Lantern product reviews. But I do a lot of talking about comic books and obviously various franchises like Ghostbusters, a lot of different sci-fi things. You can come on there, talk to me, and if it's not an area of expertise, we have a lot of people on the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network that can definitely talk to you about pretty much any sci-fi or fantasy subject.
Yeah, and if you have a particular liking of tea, then Steven's your man. But if you want to talk to me on social media, it's Adam_LeesFan on Twitter. And we also have the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page. Go there and we will add you to the page and we will continue the conversation about Ghostbusters, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, the Ninja Turtles, He-Man, wrestling, did I miss anything?
No, we traversed Flash. Flash. Yes.
Everything. Not flashing. The Flash.
Yes. No, yeah, the Flash. Yes. We keep it kid friendly. We keep it kid friendly.
PG, folks. PG-13 at the most. So find us there and let's keep the conversation going. We hope you had fun with this inaugural episode of The Hunting Haunts, a Ghostbusters podcast, and another installment of the Multiverse Musings Horrorcast, whichever one you want to look at. It's both. It's the best of both worlds, as I like to call it. And we'll be back with more on the podcast side of the equation in the coming weeks and months, where we will, like I said, just to reiterate, we'll be covering the next two movies, the Real Ghostbusters Animated Series, and the IDW Comics. So please join us for those as the months continue. And of course, as we get more information about Ghostbusters Afterlife, and whenever that does come out and we get to watch it, we'll review it and we'll cover it here as well. So we'll keep you covered in the realm of the Ghostbusters world. But until then, remember that the Ghostbusters are forever, from the first bust to the last. So long, everybody.
And out.
Don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams. Ghostbusters!